Hi, everybody. I'm Dieter. He's Jake. It's the Dieter and Hutch podcast, and we have entered our purest, most unadulterated form. We're in draft mode, ladies and gentlemen. Can we get a round of applause for draft mode? Yeah. The spreadsheets have been built. The takes have been flying. We are so ready to talk about the spine of the San Francisco 49ers and some of our favorite prospects on the interior of the offensive line, the interior of the defensive line, and we'll get the linebacker in safety in not too long. But Jake, how does it feel to be back in draft mode?
It feels like we're home. It feels like we are where we should be. You know, 10 toes
embrace.
10 toes down, deep in the murk and mire of the NFL draft, which is honestly, it's a little earlier than I feel like we've gotten into it
correct
in past years because the Niners collapsed. So we get a situation where there's actually, it's just tape, right? It's just tape. Yeah. You can do more research on guys and, like, you know, find out, oh, he squats as much, but really, like, you don't have any measurables.
I kind of dig it because we've actually been getting, you know, some of the new stuff comes in, some of the measurables that we were able to get. And it's great to be able to cross-reference that because it's really important. I mean, a lot of times we got to be honest here. When we're catching up, we're just going off of some numbers and we're letting the numbers sometimes dictate where we go. And then we watch the tape as a cross-reference. I like having the tape first and we're discovering new guys and we're finding dudes that, you know, amongst all these mock drafts, which seems to be a pretty impressive hive mind at this juncture. You know, we're finding guys that we love and we're finding guys that we hate already just because we're going off the tape, and the combine's going to change that. And y'all get to come along for the ride with us. We're really looking forward to it, but we're going to try out something new for draft stuff this year. We're going to have, of course, all of our info. I think we're just going to put it on the internet, Jake. We're going to put it in videos, of course, and we're going to put it on the podcast, but we're also going to just put it on the internet, have at it, have a guide. And that is daunting. In and
it
of
is
itself.
Daunting. It is daunting, and it's a promise we're putting out there.
Because but we're getting there.
Well, we are. And it's like, once you get in it, you know, it feels daunting. But then once you get in it, you're just churning tape.
We love it too much, my friend. We love it way too much.
I know. The season ends, and it's like I have more work now because I'm churning through tape.
Well, and of course, once more and more people get into it, that gives us more and more opportunities to play off of their stuff. And it's going to be a blast. And of course, free agency, and that's what we wanted to integrate in here. We're going to do more of a holistic approach to the draft, but we're definitely going to keep it Niner centric at least once a week as it pertains to what they need to do. And it's not just the draft, right? It's free agency as well. The Niners have as much cap room as anybody. Any Brock Purdy contract is probably going to be backloaded or at least medium loaded. So they might have some money to spend. So he's free agency needs to be talked about.
Yeah, he's going to take a hit. Like it's going to jump because it's got to, I think it would be at 3 or something. And it's, I think it'll jump to like 20, but it's not going to jump to 40 in my opinion. Like that's just not viable. But we'll see how they structure it. I bet they treat it like they just give him like a 5th year option number somewhere around 19-20.
Yeah.
But yeah. So do we want to, want to start this thing? We'll start with the interior.
We're on the interior offensive line as the video title indicated. We're on top of this. You guys, trust me, we're all over this. We're definitely not batch producing these. So, we're going to do this a little bit like Shark Tank. We're going to call it Sicko Tank, and we're going to make presentations for one player for both free agency and the NFL draft, one player that the 49ers should pick up or take in either of those things. And you know what? I'll just make sure that we get the tone set right. I got a concept in my head. Let's execute it right now. Sickos, I'm coming to you today offering a interior offensive lineman, particularly a left guard, played a little right guard, but I'm offering you on a cheap multi-year, 2 or 3 year contract. I'm offering you an opportunity to sign Indianapolis Colts guard, Will Fries, ladies and gentlemen. Sickos, I want to present Will Fries. You can see him here playing right guard for the Indianapolis Colts. Is it anything special? No. Is he going to cost you a lot? Not really. And this is just a really solid run blocker who gives you some pretty good
classic guy that I would pick up in Madden when I'm doing a franchise mode where 100%. He's just solid. Like he's not blowing the doors off you, but like he's a solid, fairly reliable guard.
We're feeling good about Ben Bartsch, right? But you need, you want to get some more folks in here that can help you out. And you could go with a rookie, absolutely. I like the options, but look at 75 moving, folks. Look at him taking out the Houston Texans here in a divisional game. What could they have done had Will Fries stayed healthy all year? I'm not sure it would have changed Anthony Richardson's situation, but the man can run block. And you put him next to Colton McKivitz, who can run block, or you put him next to Trent Williams, who certainly can run block, and you're in a really good situation. So I'm feeling good about Will Fries, a low-cost, low-stress option. Why? I would love it if they got Trey Smith. Hutch, that would tickle me in ways that I can't express here on the family show. Well, but they're not going to do that.
You want to talk about you're selling our sickos, you're selling our sharks, our sicko sharks.
Yeah.
What are we talking here? Are we talking 2 million, 3 million, five? Like what are we feeling here with Will Fries?
I'm willing to go up to about $5 million a year with Will Fries. Obviously, I think Indianapolis is not in a position where they want to lose a player like him. He's cheap. He was a 7th-round pick out of Penn State. His contract's up. But, the Colts are also in just a weird spot. I'm not sure if Will Fries, who didn't get but 268 snaps last year because he got injured, I'm not sure if that's somebody that they want to commit long-term to, right, and give a solid amount. Maybe they want to move it out. Maybe I don't know who came in after. I wish I had that info. I'm not watching a lot of Colts film from this year, but I knew about Will Fries. The PFF grades are awesome, and you watch him, and you go, this is solid. You're never going to talk about Will Fries again in a negative light if you sign him on your team. He's just going to give you solid play, and you know what? When you're dealing with a center position that needs an upgrade, unquestionably, you need two interior offensive line upgrades. You need to get a left guard and you need to get a center. You can pick one or the other on where you want to spend your money. I got to think that they want to do it at center. They've done it before. I think they should do it again.
Yeah.
But you also need to make sure that you're not shoving in another rookie because Dominic Pooney.
Yeah. They've also been snake bitten. They've also been snake bitten with the Western Richburg deal and they had Alex Mack for a year. And then they did the thing where they paired Aaron Banks with him instead of just getting a center in Creed Humphrey. Right. Who could play,
right?
Play left guard and then move over. And that brings us to my guy.
Yeah.
Same exact draft class as Aaron Banks and Creed Humphrey.
Yep.
I've talked about him ad nauseum. Drew Dahlman.
Sell the sickos on Drew Dahlman.
So Drew Dahlman, folks, he is in the 49ers mold. Let's be clear here. This is a guy who's 26, won't turn 27 until October. And he is a guy who his dad played center for the San Francisco 49ers, Bay Area kid,
yep.
Went to Stanford. Like he was on the 49ers radar because they signed Mack and because they were looking for a guard, they kind of let it slip and they drafted Ambry Thomas over him. Yeah. And Aaron Banks. There's plenty to criticize, but that's how they handled it. And now I think they want to see if they can bring him in. So this is our guy, Drew Dahlman here. Number 67, right in the middle. This is a great, great play. He's getting second level. He's basically blocking two guys in the run game here against the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're going to see it better from this other angle here. Right up, he's got a nose tackle looking square at him. I want to say that's Patrick Queen, number 6. He's going to get hands on both guys.
Bam.
He's going to get hands on both guys.
Bam, nice block.
And look, and it matters. It's a block that matters.
How happy was the offensive line coach for the Falcons showing that film the next day?
I mean, it's just outstanding. And this is him, I mean, granted, this is terrible from Milton Williams. it's pretty embarrassing from your
Great sentence. Pretty embarrassing from Milton Williams.
But look, it's just easy. It's a runway. It's not going to get easier than that for Algier. So that's what you're looking at from Drew Dahlman. He's pretty great in my view. This is him in the pass game, because that's the thing about Drew Dahlman is you got questions, right? Is he going to hold up in the pass game the same way in the run game? The answer is no. He's not nearly as good a pass blocker as he is a run blocker, but he's an elite run blocker, and he's getting better every single year. This is year 4. I think the third year for him as a true starter. He missed some games with an ankle injury, but he really looked good in pass protection, and then I think while he's not got like an elite Creed Humphrey anchor, Like, he's also not going to cost $18 million like Creed Humphrey. It's probably going to be more like 13. The center market's a little weird where Humphrey's like 18 and the next guy's like 13.5.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird range. But this is him. You know, there's two guys coming, just handles it, smart on the stunt, really, really easy, simple stuff. And then the next one, you know, once again, there's a little twist coming, and he's going to handle it like a pro. He's just reliable and smart. And so I think when you worry about, like, pass protection, you worry about, can he get people organized? Can he hold up when there's complicated stuff? And you watch there. There's two guys, and he's set up to take both of them. Gives Charlie Warner enough time to come in and insert there. And that's what you get with Drew Dolman. You get a cerebral center who's really, really, really good in the run game, can get out and do all the things the 49ers love, has the athletic measurables, and is smart enough, agile enough, quick enough with his hands to hold up in the pass game.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, now when we're talking contract, you mentioned it's not going to be top of the market. You'd have to expect that Atlanta's going to want him back. So you're going to have to overbid a bit. Yep. What's the number?
I think the range here is 12 to 15. I think if it gets to 15, the 49ers might be out. I think if it stays around 13, they could be in. And again, this is going to be a deal where there's going to be more on the back end. There's going to be void years, and he's a younger guy. So you want to say, all right, well, we can restructure this down the line. I just think, listen, there's a chance the price tag is too high for them, right? There's a chance they say, all right, it's not really worth it. But I will say he's a major clear upgrade over Jake Brendel, and he's a guy where Jake Brendel, you would post June 1 cut him or see if somebody wants to throw you a seventh, and then you save a few million that way. But I just think Dolman is such a clear upgrade. He's a young player. He's athletic. He does what the 49ers like. It'll just depend on, like, what the bidding gets to, and if it gets over 14, 15, maybe the 49ers bow out, or maybe they're not in at all. I just think if there is one guy you could get who's out on the market, who's the right age, it's him. No question.
And unquestionably a scheme fit, knowing where he's coming from in Atlanta. I mean, it's an upgrade. It's unquestionably an upgrade. The issue that I would have with this is, how much of an upgrade over a healthy Jake Brendel is he? Is this enough to where this is where you allocate your funds? I think that there's a good case to be made for it. I think that they could do a whole lot worse. They have spent money in worse places, that is for sure. But if you have a healthy Jake Brendel, who was a Pro Bowl alternate not that long ago, is going and getting a Drew Dolman worth the delta between the two of them?
Well, that's where my alternative comes in. So my alternative, and then you'll finish up. Yeah. So my alternative here is a guy named Parker Brailsford.
Of Washington?
From the University of Alabama. He was on that elite offensive line for UW last year, along with Fautanu and Roger Rosengarten, probably the best offensive line in the nation. Michigan was right up there. Those two were the clear two best.
They were awesome.
Like pro style offense.
There wasn't an offensive line like that in college football this year from our early.
No. At least it didn't seem like it on first glance. No. So Brailsford is a guy. We'll just watch here again. He's going to get out the run game. You'll see him. He's a center. He can move. And once he gets his hands on you, he's going to move you. That's just the reality of it. And so this is him. I think when you worry about Brailsford, you know, we're talking about the same things that, you know, if you're looking for a pass protector, all that. What do you worry about? You worry about, like, his anchor. But I think what I see with him is a really elite ability to reset his anchor. And he has quick hands, and he's really good at picking up stunts, late blitzers, loopers, things that are, like, really crucial for a center to be aware of. Mm-hmm. And so his cerebral ability is really, really high for me. So you're going to see a few different clips here. This is him at Bama, and he just looks really good. This is him at UW, and he's just picking up guys that are flying in from different directions at a really high level. And he readjusts, clears his guy out of the way and resets. And I got one more clip for you. This is going to be him against Georgia. So this is the resetting the anchor that I talk about. So he gets it. So you'll watch, you'll see this clip from the other angle. And you'll look, like, he gets pushed back here, but look, he resets and he's stout. Like, he gets hit, pop, but then
yeah, holds it.
Right. So it's like, again, is that the sexiest thing in the entire world? No. But you know, we're talking about a guy in Parker Brailsford who's probably at earliest going to go in the third round. I think he's going to test good, not top tier elite. But I think he'll test well. And so what you're talking about here is you're keeping Jake Brendel. You've got Matt Hennessy, who Drew Dahlman, by the way, beat out for the starting job years ago in Atlanta. Drake Nugent. And then in like, you know, late third, fourth round, you pick up Brailsford, who's a guy that in a year is your starting center. Or at the very least is a guy that you feel decent about. And I just think he is athletic. He can get out in space. He can move guys. His anchor is an elite, but the way he processes the game is something where they ask a lot of their centers, and I think that's something where you're like, all right, he can, in a year or two, get to that level where he's able to help set protections, he's able to identify things, and take a lot off Brock's plate and get the offensive line organized in a way that they weren't this year.
You give him the full Carson Palmer year, right? The way that you would probably want to handle a quarterback, where you give them a lot of time to learn the system and understand the terminology and get their bearings under them. You do the same for a center. You could have also done it for Drake Nugent. I mean, how does he stack up with the Nuge?
I think he has a better anchor than Nugent. I saw Nugent get pushed. I remember in camp. I think he got pushed around quite a bit. But I think it would be a reasonable competition. I think the fact that Niners didn't really play Nugent, maybe that's a strategic move and just fully redshirt him so no one gets any tape on him. Right. We'll see. And maybe they feel good about Hennessy and they just go in with Brendel and Hennessy and Nugent. I just think, I don't know, if you can get a guy in like the fourth round, if you're not going to take a big swing at it, a guy who's really cerebral, who you're like has the athletic traits to be able to be your starting center for a long time in a year. And it's like, listen, he played at Alabama. He played at UW. These are big programs that ask a lot of their centers and their offensive linemen. I think he'd be a quick study. But yeah, it's a fair question. If they're higher on Nugent, maybe they eschew that.
There's no indication that they're as high on Nugent as we are. So I think that has to be noted. It wouldn't shock me at all, but it is something that needs to be brought up because, again, as you noted, they already have two veteran centers on the roster, a prospect center. Do they want to go back to the well? I don't think they do. You and I both agree that they should. But let's talk guard. And let's talk
this big, beautiful man that you found for us, Peter.
Let's talk about a Missouri Tiger, a true son through and through. His name is Armon Membu. And this guy is about to take over the NFL draft process. He played right tackle at Mizzou. Okay, 18 starts at right tackle over the last 2 years. He's a junior, a little bit of a surprise that he came out for us Tigers fans. But he absolutely should come out because this is one of the rare prospects that gives teams both upside and flexibility immediately. You might be asking, Dieter, why are you trying to sell me here on a guy who played right tackle for Missouri? As I've said, I think you were on this before anybody else, the most underrated player, perhaps the breakout player of the 49ers this past year was Colton McKivitz, their right tackle. He was, and I would say at this point, inarguably, the best offensive lineman on the team. Not a high bar.
I would say you could argue him and Pooney.
I mean, people will argue Pooney. I think that McKivitz had a much better year than Pooney.
I think McKivitz was all around more reliable, and I agree with you. I'm just saying.
No, I just
it's not inarguable.
So the right tackle is a position that's covered. You don't have to worry about it. Now, left tackle is a position that is in question, and it's not because Trent Williams is washed or anything. It's just you don't know what you're getting from Trent Williams moving forward. So Armon Membu gives you the possibility of having your future left tackle. He was playing right at Mizzou. That do not read into that too much. It was just a matter of seniority at this point. But when you are talking about this guy, he is, as you saw on the highlights, stubby. He's got a big ass. There's no simple way to put it. You look at him and you say, that's a guard. And then you look at his arms and you say, that's a tackle. And I look at him and I say, that's a guy who played outside zone at the college level at tackle And you could do it much like Dominic Pooney, where you just slide him inside. And if he never moves from guard, you're fine. Now, might you argue that that's way too early to draft a guard? Perhaps. But right. Not for this. Like, I but really what, don't think yeah. for this guy.
So to me, I think what's the number one thing in the run game that matters? Displacement. To me, totally. That's the number one thing that allows for explosive plays. Obviously, everybody hitting their blocks. But in terms of like an offensive line creating holes, it's displacing people. It's pushing, a three tech out of the way and then getting to the second level. And then you have a hole and you got a 13-yard gain. Mm-hmm. You know, through the A gap. So like, or the B gap, whatever. But like, that's
it's power and speed when you're running this scheme. Okay. And he's doing it at tackle. He's 320 pounds. Okay. So, and the way that he's built, that's all in the lower body. He's got anchor. He's got more anchor than he knows what to do with. He is powerful. I'm watching, I'll just put it up right now. Nick Scourin is going to go in the, I'll get it eventually. He's going to go pretty early, probably first round in the NFL draft. Here he is, number 11. That's a great position to get a sack, huh? Right there? What are we looking at? Absolute mauled. This is a guy who, when he gets his hands on you, you just fall to the ground. You don't stand a chance. He's immensely powerful. He's going up in the strongest conference in football. He's doing it against the best pass rushers in football consistently. Yeah. Great pass by Drew Pine there. This guy from Vanderbilt just dies.
Yeah, that snatch trap technique. Like, he's got incredible, incredible strength and power with his hands.
Again, we're talking about elite, first-round caliber defensive linemen, and he is making them non-existent. So you throw him at guard. Those hands, that technique, that anchor, it immediately plays. And down the line, if you need him, in the way that the Niners needed Spencer Burford this season to slide over, you can play him at a tackle. And maybe he can be your right tackle of the future or your left tackle of the future. You can move him there eventually.
Like, either way, he can play. He has the physical traits to be able to move there.
This is a guy who ran a 10-yard split of 1.6 seconds at 320 pounds.
That's genuinely really scary.
That's fast for 215. His 20 was 2.8. He can jump 32 inches. He can squat 600. Okay. He is massive. 18% body fat on a 320-pound frame.
Yeah. But let's be clear. This is like an 11th overall pick or a slight trade down. That's like that's the range for this guy, right?
Well, and so this is one of the frustrating parts, because I was all in on him when we started our process. Okay, and I don't partake in the day to day. I got stuff going on. I'm not looped in. And you send me a little thing the other day that says our friend Dane Brugler, who does the best draft guide, had Membu at 11. And I go, 11th, like for offensive linemen? And you go, no, at number 11 overall. And after I was done seething, I go, Dane, you done it again. Because I absolutely think that he is a viable option to go 11. He's going to go out of this world at the combine. There's already a buzz about him, right? Because it was a surprise he came out. Right. He turned down a lot of money from Missouri to come back. He came out early. Why? Because the NFL people told him, you're going to be fine. The media hasn't caught up, but you're going to be fine. You should come out. And
by the way, who is Dane's second choice for the San Francisco 49ers in the second round, Dieter?
Was it Walter Nolan? Yeah.
That's a setup.
I'll just give us a hint here. I disagree with Dane. I love Walter Nolan. I disagree with Dane here. Dane does a great job. I really value his opinions on the matter. I appreciate how he's not part of the hive mind.
It's awesome.
So there's something to be said. Like, it gives me second thought on a Walter Nolan that he has him at 43, whereas you and I, we cross-check this stuff. We both have a first-round grade on him. Now, I think in both the case of Membu and Nolan, we'll drop Nolan, we'll talk about him in the video. In the case of Membu, I don't think 11 is probably the right spot. I would say somewhere around 15 to 20 would be the right spot for him, just because of the value of the position, right? If you're going to play him at guard with the future of yep. being a tackle, that's great. But if you're drafting somebody in the top 12, 13, it's artificial line. You need him to play right away, and you need him to play at a premier position.
Chris Foerster said it. Like, they believe in trying to get guys in more like the third and fourth round and develop them, maybe the second. And I think they have to reevaluate that philosophy. And I do think it depends on the player. It does depend on the fact that, like, last year they didn't have, like, the right guys available to them. And I think if they were in the range for some of them, they would have considered it.
Yeah.
But they weren't. And there's an interesting crop. And, again, this is early in the process. So, like, to say a guy's going 11 and he could go 30th or he could go 4th. Well,
and let's be clear about this. Like, a lot of people have him ranked as, like, a third-round guy, a second-round guy, and then Brugler's coming in saying 11, and watch what will happen in the next couple days. Everyone will be like, oh, he's going to be a first-rounder. Which it could have been us, Jake. It could have been us.
I mean, well, there's some guys we're going to mention that you're going to see them as not even on lists.
Right.
Late round picks, and then you'll see. You'll see. Right. Just wait.
And that's what we love to do. We love the middle round guys. We love finding guys before the combine and all the buzz gets to them. It's what we love to do. But frankly, I know that a lot like Ricky Pearsall, right? A lot of hand-wringing over, oh, you took a wide receiver there. When you have a player like Armon Membu and it's 11 and you're thinking about it, don't overthink it.
Just do this.
He's an immediate player for you. And with the potential that this kid has, he doesn't know what he's doing yet. And he's this good against SEC competition. What happened if he stayed at Missouri for another year, was playing left tackle? He's going in the top five.
Dieter, just watching him, and I hadn't watched him until you sent me some tape of him, and immediately I'm fully sold that he's an impact player day one. Like, exactly. He is too much power, too much anchor, too much athleticism in a frame that's already going to move people out of the way. And there's so much to learn. Like, the upside is astronomical, and I actually think the floor is fairly high.
That's where I'm at. And listen, can you find a player who could maybe do something like this later on? Absolutely. But why put that stress on you? Why do it when this is, I would argue, your number one need outside a defensive tackle? And wouldn't fate have it, Jake, that's who we're going to talk about in the next.
That's right. Have you been sold? Have you sickos been sold on?
So let's go over what we're selling you here. We're talking about Fries from Indianapolis. What was his first name?
Will Fries.
Will
how
Fries.
Much you, how much are you selling this basket of fries for, Dieter?
I'm selling it for about $4.99. And that would be in millions, $4.99. And you just bring them in and you set and forget. One of those beautiful situations where you go, hey, you know, he might not even win the job, but you have a guy, he's in there, he should win the job. And you just feel comfortable with how it all goes down. It's not too stressful. It's not too crazy. You just punt that problem to next year's draft if you have to, but you bring in Fries. And he gives you some options. And if you don't want to go that route, maybe you overspend a little bit on Fries. Maybe you're overspending a little bit on Membu, but it's a set and forget, right? And not only that, you get the possibility of having your Trent Williams replacement in-house, and you can play him at guard until then because he's that kind of a player. Not a lot of dudes that you can say that about, if there are any other dudes in this draft that you can say that about. So to have the opportunity to take one, I don't care if it's 11, I don't care if it's 20, I don't care if it's 5. You have to seriously consider it. So I'm selling Membu, I'm selling Fries, and you're selling?
Selling Drew Dahlman for the not cheap price of about, you know, $14 plus tax.
There we go.
Maybe $13. Depends.
You know how the tax works here, California. I mean, I guess he knows. Yeah. He's a California kid.
Oh,
he's a
Bay
Area kid.
He knows, and maybe that nostalgia will get to him. But you're getting a young center who will be your starting center and elevate your offense for the next 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Depends. Like, he's got a lot in the tank.
He's definitely giving you one.
He's athletic. He's at least giving you one, and he's a clear upgrade over what you have. And maybe you don't value that as much as I do, but that's what I'm selling you. Either you're sold on him or you're not. And then I'm also selling you a guy named Parker Brailsford. intelligent, athletic kid. He's not the biggest, not the biggest anchor, but that's why he's not a first, a second, maybe even a third round pick. He might be your fourth round pick where you stick him behind. It's a much cheaper investment. And you stick him behind Jake Brendel and you have him compete for the job. And then you've got a real, another long-term center for cheap. You got a mini Dahlman. And that's what you got going forward.
So again, what we're selling here is I'm selling you cheap, a low cost free agency option and a high cost draft option. Jake giving you the high cost free agency option and the low cost draft option. I love it when a plan comes together.
A little bit of that.
But ultimately, it's all about the spine, Jake, and we got to move to, I think, what we both agree is the number one priority for this team. If you haven't watched the video already, check it out. Defensive tackle. We're going to get into it on the next edition of Dieter and Hutch.
That's right.